goody, goody, here it comes.
Welcome to the Cinema Psycho Show.
You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here.
Oh my God, don't stop now!
With your hosts, Ryan, John, and Elaine.
Welcome to the Cinema Psycho Show, the madhouse from film freaks and film fans of all types. I'm your host, Brian Coddington, joined by my fellow co-hosts and filmmakers, John and Lane Wolfscroft.
Too hot to handle, too cold to hold. You call the Ghostbusters and they take control.
Wow. That was exciting.
Is it really that awful? Ghostbusters 2.
That's what we're
going to jump
today,
into
folks.
It, but I don't mean to get ahead of myself. Brian, what episode are we on here?
We're on episode 115.
Ooh.
115. We're on episode 115. And if you are listening to us and you're like, what is up with all the noise? Why are they yelling into the microphone? Well, the reason is because we are at Pittsburgh Podcast Festival.
Yeah, we're at Spirit in Lawrenceville.
And we're doing this thing live.
So, yeah, we got to talk a little bit louder than usual.
Yes.
But it's hard for me to realize that I'm talking straight into a microphone, so it's probably much easier for listeners to hear than it is for me
at the moment. I hope that it's easier for listeners.
That's what we're hoping. We're hoping it's a better situation.
I do.
So this will either be fine or our worst episode of all time. Let's find out.
I mean, it can't beat the time that we brought someone who gave us a bad review on, and that one was pretty bad. That was really bad. So, we're going to dive right into this. No news bit this time around,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, no.
No news bit.
We have all the news for you, and the news is about Ghostbusters 2.
Yep. Yeah.
That's all we got.
Yep. So, how do we want to start this off? Well, let me ask you guys this question. What are your first memories involved with Ghostbusters 2?
So, I didn't realize this until recently, but, like, I entrenched Ghostbusters 1 and 2 together so strongly that, like, I kind of confused them as the same movie for a while. Yeah, like, I didn't realize I had done this, but I have them very enmeshed in my memories, and I had forgotten that the second one does take place on December 31st, and I always wondered why I played on fucking New Year's Eve, like, on cable. I always wondered that, and, like, felt like a real dumbass when I, like, finally, like, just watched the second one, because I usually watched them together. Now, I loved the cartoon as a kid. Like,
oh, my God,
straight
the cartoon's
up loved
fucking
the
amazing.
Fucking cartoon. So good. So good.
You mean the real Ghostbusters? Because they stole the name to begin with, and then they were catty about it, but the real Ghostbusters at the front of the name?
Oh, is it cattiness? That's too bad.
There was a Ghostbusters TV show in the 70s.
Oh.
And then there was a coke addict from Chicago and a coke addict from Groundlings got together and didn't look it up and wrote a script.
Oh, how about that?
Didn't bother to check.
How about that?
When I was a kid, when I was very little, I liked this one more than the first one.
Me too.
Yeah.
Up until
me too.
Probably like when I started entering like my teenage years.
Okay.
And I just realized the first one is far superior.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I think that it's because it's so similar to the cartoon, which, you know, I love so very, very much. Like you
right.
and
Yeah,
so.
I love the cartoon. Yeah.
I know for me, I remember watching this one. And, like, as a kid, you were always obsessed with, like, slime and gack and, you know, Floam and all that shit.
Yeah, dude.
So, like, that alone right there was enough for me to really, like, gravitate towards it.
I was allowed exactly none of that shit. Like, my mom, like, outlawed gack. She outlawed Floam. She was like, that would not be in...
Floam's, like, the mildest of all the things.
She was like, I'm having none of that shit in my house, which I respect. I respect it.
Wow.
Well, I had the Ghostbusters firehouse, and it came with the slime that you could put through the top. My mom was like, hell no.
Yeah,
no.
Even your mom.
I'm
your mom was like pretty lax
you can
with
have
that
the
stuff.
House,
yeah.
But taking the slime. Slime?
Yeah. Your mom was pretty open-minded when it came to like child playthings of fluid.
She didn't want whatever god-awful poison that was on her carpet.
Well, that's the thing. Like for me, the gack actually like leached into the carpet from my toy box. Like, I had a toy box. The gack was in there. The gack got out in there, leached down. And when we actually moved out of that house, the gack stain was still there.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
So when I was a kid, people were playing with it. I remember there was a fire in my elementary school.
Yeah.
The dryers, like, there was, like, rags with that mineral spirit shit on it. And, like, that shit will just, like, randomly ignite. So, like, it'll just flame up. That's what happened. And we were evacuated to the high school. So you have a bunch of elementary kids who are bored out of their minds, like waiting for their parents to like pick them up or whatever, because it happened at like 11 in the morning. And so somebody threw the GAC at the ceiling of the auditorium. It stuck there.
Wow.
Stayed there for like 2 years, legit 2 years. Just hung there.
Wow.
It was crazy. It was like the stuff of legend.
Guys, it is. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves. This is another edition of Really That Awful.
Really now, That
for,
Awful.
Since we're at Pittsburgh PodCon, John, do you want to, for the uninitiated, because we are trying to do this thing live, like right now on YouTube. So for the uninitiated who have never heard of Really That Awful, do you want to give us a quick quick definition of what that is?
Yes. So Brian and I were having discussions about Cable Guy and what was the very first episode we did where you and I were...
I thought it was Cable Guy.
It was Cable Guy.
Was it?
We did Toys.
I want to look in the archives on that one. But, you know, where... Oh, it was Last Action Hero.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And Cable Guy. That was
it. We thought these movies get a bad rap. And maybe they deserve a second look. Now, Really That Awful is open to interpretation because we're going to look at some of these movies, and they may still be that awful, but we're going to put it through a dissection to determine if these movies deserve a second shot or not. And a lot of people said, forget the Ghostbusters Answered the Call ruining the franchise. A lot of negative people said Ghostbusters 2 did that in 1989.
It's true.
And Ghostbusters 2 is one of the, it's as you mentioned, in 1989, that's one of the movies that came out during that summer, right?
Summer of 89.
Summer of 89, which, honestly, in my opinion, is one of the best years for films. 89.
Yeah. A lot of strong franchises come out that year, for sure.
Definitely. So, I never felt that this movie was bad. I really didn't. I always felt that this movie was misunderstood. I felt that it's not as dark as the original movie. Because you saw in this one that they got rid of a lot of the smoking, they got rid of all the sex, because let's not forget that in Ghostbusters, Dan Aykroyd, who you met.
Yes.
You met him.
My close personal friend, Dan Aykroyd.
Friend
close
of the show.
Friend of the show.
Who I don't think looked me in the eye the entire time.
He was wearing sunglasses. It was hard to tell.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, like if I met him, I would have asked him, one, can you explain to me the concept that went through your head when you created Nothing But Trouble? Because that's one of my favorite movies. But I would also have asked him, like, did you fuck that ghost?
He definitely did.
Well, he at least got, you know, he got, like, a suck job.
A spectral suck job.
Which, I don't know, Slimer went through Venkman. How does she have suction power as a ghost?
I don't know.
There's different classes of ghosts. Yeah. They all have different talents, I suppose.
Which there is
a class 10 vapor
and
of suction.
It didn't
suction
have to be a she, by the way.
What?
You said for the ghost for the sucking?
Yes.
Yeah. It's clearly a woman.
That's a woman.
Yeah.
Oh, you see the ghost? I thought you guys were talking about that scene where he's like having a dream almost.
That's the ghost fucking him.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't see like
he's
that it was
the ghost.
I didn't see it was a lady. I don't know.
Oh, it's a lady. Oh, yeah. It's like a like blonde-haired woman. That's just floating above
him.
Well,
I just saw like the sheet go down and
the sheet goes down and zipper goes down.
Yeah. Well, I guess I missed the ghost.
There's a woman's face. This is 1984. This is Reagan's America. There's no chance that Ray's getting blown by a dude.
Okay.
Not 1984.
I was trying to be open-minded to hold my face.
Yeah. So, but with Ghostbusters 2, you know, they really like tried to almost get rid of a lot of those like darker elements.
It got a little Disney-fied.
It got Disney-fied.
Cleaned
it up. I think part of that is because of the fact that Real Ghostbusters was really popular around that time.
That's true.
I would say this is the perfect sequel to the cartoon.
It is, and it's hard to like remember that because, you know, if you look at the first film, then you look at the second film, and John, you actually illuminated a lot of this for me. Like, the second film does have some fundamental problems.
You know,
it's a little disjointed. Some stuff just doesn't seem to add up right. And John, you were telling me that it had a lot of like rewrites and a lot of edits, you know, or a lot of edit changes.
A whole lot of cocaine.
I mean, so much cocaine.
Cocaine.
That's a given.
And copy and paste.
That's a given.
Cocaine and copy
but
and paste.
I mean, but you were saying, John, that it did have like those issues, and I think that really makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it does have a lot of structural problems, and there are some like plot holes that don't make any sense. And then, of course, there's a few things for me as a embittered millennial that I don't understand. Like Dana Barrett's two jobs. Like, what
That's
the
a good
fuck?
Point.
Do
you
that
wanna,
is so
do
weird.
Do you want to explain this part with Dana Barrett's two jobs?
So in the first movie, Is she a cellist? Is that what her instrument? Yes. She's a cellist.
She works in the symphony.
Right, and so she plays for the symphony. She's like first or second chair or whatever, and that's fine. I get that. Totally fine. But when she has her son in the second movie, she has her son, baby Oscar.
Who's an ugly baby.
He is an ugly baby.
He's not a good-looking kid. I'm not going to lie. But she's just like moonlighting at this like art restoration center. And
at
so she's like an award-winning restoration like specialist, yeah. Which is also a very specific job. And I feel like, I'm sorry, like you either went to school for art history for like 6 years to do what she's doing, or you study music for that long to do that. Like, I don't see how you could possibly have the training for both of those jobs at the same time.
It's nerve-wracking, isn't it?
Like I would have murdered someone to have a job like that out of college anyway, much less to have, like, oh, I'm just doing this until my baby's older. Like, what?
Well, that's the thing. Dana also moonlights as an astronaut.
Apparently.
How did she get that beautiful apartment with one income outside of Central Park?
Right?
In New York
I don't
City.
Get it. Yeah. I don't get it.
And well, the location of Spook Central.
Well, the thing that always got me about... The thing that always got me about that whole scenario is that she actually says in the movie to Janosch, oh, well, you know, now that my baby's older, I can quit this, you know, shitty job doing restoration and go back to my
art.
She acts like she's picked up some shifts at Blockbuster. Yeah. Like, the fuck,
Dana? It's like, listen, it's not like you're working at the mini mart, okay?
Yeah, and I mean, you can tell I graduated college in 08, like the worst year for any of this shit.
But you
know?
Love that when basically it's like, oh, you know, I can just go ahead and pick up my side gig doing art restoration at the museum, you know, and do that until my kid's old enough. Which, by the way, here's the thing that really got me about that. She has a nanny.
Yeah.
In the movie.
Dana Barrett sells drugs. There's that's the only answer.
Oh, that's
Pablo Escobar.
Okay, all right.
But guys, I love how you guys are talking so much about Dana Barrett, but you're both overlooking the fact that somehow Dana has two unbelievable connections to the end of the world ghost attacks.
Okay, tell me more.
Explain.
You guys are just not bothered by the fact that Dana Barrett is immediately connected with Zool and also connected with Vigo.
I mean, ghosts kind of follow the lady around.
Fun story. There is a deleted scene in the movie where Egon believes that she is somehow cursed and connected to all the paranormal experiences of New York City.
Why do they not mention that?
And that it's passed on to her son.
Why is that not a thing? Why is that a deleted scene?
That would be great fodder for a sequel.
Yeah, well, like the third one could have been all about Dana. Yeah.
Or no, about Oscar. I would say about Oscar.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Dana could have been in it.
Well, they could do that 5 years later again, which we haven't mentioned. This came out in 1989, the first one in 1984. 5 years is a long time to keep audiences enthralled, even with a huge hit like Ghostbusters.
Yeah. True, 5 years is a little too long.
Yeah, I don't know what took so long. I mean, I think Dan Aykroyd was ready 10 minutes after the first one was finished to start the next one.
Well, I mean, they had some script problems, and too, I mean, and it turned to like fizzle out when they tried to make a third one, so I think it was just trying to get everybody on board, you know?
Yeah.
Now, did Harold Ramis, did he direct the second one as well?
Well, no, Ivan Reitman directed these films.
Harold Ramis wrote it.
Oh, that's right. I always get that fucked up. That's right. Yeah.
No, this was Ivan Reitman again.
Okay,
that's why I said a cokehead from Groundlings and a cokehead from Second City.
Ah.
Right, yeah. But this film really, like, they added elements that I think are good. So, like, some of the positive things I'll mention is I like the fact that the Ghostbusters weren't heroes at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, how they're like a little underdog-ish.
I liked it.
Oh, I got a lot to unpack there. But, Brian, before we jump into the positives.
Okay. Oh, you want to go negative on this?
Well, that's
you want some
how
of that negative. You want to do some of that negative mood slime.
A little,
right?
That's how we start. Yeah.
Negative mood slime.
Get the slime dancing in our toaster with the segment that we like to call, okay, we get it.
All right. All right, John, unpack it for us.
Okay, so here's a couple of problems I had.
Okay.
Why doesn't anyone remember the Ghostbusters or what they did? Does no one remember a 30-foot
Marshmallow Man. It's been 5 years.
Come on,
right?
It's been 5 years.
Do you forget 9/11?
No,
there's a giant monster.
I'm not saying people forget, but it's not like it's been 7 months. Like, it's not outrageous.
But right. Everybody doesn't believe them. Oh, you guys are hack frauds. There's no such thing as ghosts. Like, how is that possibly a thing?
Yeah, I mean, I'll agree with that. Like, you would think a giant event like ghosts erupting all over the city, a giant fucking marshmallow man, that would, you know, necessitate some level of, you know, cognitive understanding.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I'll explain it. It's called lazy screenwriting because it's easier when your heroes are at the bottom
low point.
And they can work their way up.
Of course.
You know?
You need to see that arc, and the arc needs to be more significant.
I still like the fact that they are washed up.
This is the same movie. It's the exact same movie. It's a Home Alone 2 paradox.
Well, let me ask you this. If they did come in as the heroes that everyone remembers, where do they have to go in their journey?
Well, that's up to Dan Aykroyd and Harold
Ramis.
But that's
what I'm saying. In terms of writing for the screen, it's easier to have it where your heroes, they did a great thing, but then bullshit got in the way, and they're back down to starting at zero again. So, like, in this regard, in the film, it's kind of revealed that the stuff that they had done was kind of proven, at least by politicians, and my guess is that Walter Peck fucker, you know, as bullshit.
Well, they were sued by every state, county, and something.
Well, I mean, you also have to think about the realities of, like, something like that. Like, yeah, they saved people from ghosts, but, like, a lot of property damage.
Yes.
A lot of damages. Probably pissed off a lot of people.
Yes, absolutely.
I buy that, guys, but I don't understand how nobody thinks that ghosts are real or they're genuine.
Well, I mean, they did save the city, but, you know, I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's kind of like the Sunnydale, like symptom. Like, you know.
Buffy reference.
I was about to explain. But, like, when something weird happens in Sunnydale on the show Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you know, they explain it away with, like, a gas main break, you know, people on PCP. Like, they find these mundane descriptions, and it's like the town kind of protecting itself from the more supernatural element.
Right, right. No, it makes sense. Makes sense.
Like, purposely forgetting because the truth is just too much shit to deal with.
But why has there not been a single ghost attack in 5 years?
I mean, I'm not sure that there hasn't been. It's just been, like, very fringe. And, like, the Ghostbusters haven't really been
there to help.
Well,
they're out of business. I mean, now they were sued out of business, but nevertheless.
Right.
But I just found that so odd. But,
it is. I mean, it's one of the things that doesn't quite sit right about the story. It's true.
Number two, Brian, as you mentioned, it is neutered.
Yes.
Yeah,
this movie went to the vet and they snipped those balls.
It doesn't have any teeth. Yeah. It's true.
I blame the cartoon for that.
Yeah.
As much as I love the cartoon, it kind of kiddified the Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, it's so clear that they're catering to the cartoon audience. I think that's why I loved it so much when I was 7 years old.
Yeah.
Janine, it's for children.
Yeah. Janine looks like she does in the cartoon.
Right.
Slimer's everywhere.
Right.
You know, they eventually changed the show to Slimer in the real Ghostbusters.
They did.
So,
that's right.
As an effort to sell Ecto Cooler, which I'm sorry, it's still delicious.
Yeah. It reminds me a lot of Batman Forever.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, okay, it's still the Black Bat outfit, and he's still fighting crime, and there's still his villains, but it's more kid aesthetic, more toy aesthetic, you know?
Right,
we're
going
to dumb it down so that, like, the whole family can like it. Or Secret of the Ooze, the Turtles movie, where they're like, don't make it so dark, and don't let them use their weapons. We got to sell toys.
Yeah, it's
and the Parents Council's mad at us.
I mean, they're called Ninja. You know, that's they have weapons.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. I would say that there's too much goddamn Rick Moranis in this.
There's a lot of
Lewis.
You
like Rick Moranis?
A lot of
Lewis. I love Rick Moranis, but just like Ian Malcolm in Jurassic Park and, you know, other characters, the less the better.
It's like seasoning. You can't use too much or the dish is just like a muddled mess. You need to like lightly season, you know, like using like bacon in a dish, like you need a little bit like to give it body, you know, when you put it like in a, like a corn chowder.
But
you need
you gotta admit that the times when Rick was in those scenes, he became the central focus
of
those scenes.
Dude, he's amazing. There's no question.
The courtroom scene is probably the best scene because he's so goddamn funny.
He's so fucking funny, and he steals the show.
I even
like the
romance between him and Janine.
Yeah, and I mean, there's almost a point, though, where it does feel a little uncomfortable to me, like when they're babysitting for Dana.
That's kind of weird.
Well, it's almost like he discovered his own dick for the first time. And
He probably did.
I'm like, wait, like, no, like, you've played with that thing yourself. Like, don't pretend you don't know what that is.
Okay, who brought my dog?
also on. That probably was the first time he discovered his dick with another person.
Well, no, he fucked Dana in the first one.
He doesn't remember it.
No. Yeah.
He was a dog.
Yeah.
He fucked Dana.
I can't imagine why they didn't film that scene. This, like, demon dog just pounding Dana.
No. The things that
into
the
turning
things
into
you celebrate,
dog.
John.
You know what? Let's put that in the movie. And then I'll get another blowjob. Crystal head vodka.
So much cocaine.
Wow.
Which is actually very smooth. Dan, it's very expensive. Send me a free bottle, free plug, crystal head vodka. It's so smooth. Send me a free bottle.
It was
please.
Pretty good. I'm not going to lie.
Right. Yeah, okay.
Guys, it's the same movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the exact same movie.
Yeah.
Now, that as we brought up on our sequels episode, that's the catch 22. If they went out on a limb, we'd be like, oh, this isn't Ghostbusters.
Yes.
But. It's the exact same movie.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
I mean that's what you're going to get with this sort of with these franchise movies.
Yeah.
And I would say that Ghostbusters 2 was probably at the beginning of the whole franchise movement when it came to movies being turned into that. Because what do we have? We had Superman.
Yeah,
and Superman had been done a couple times, but. You know, you really didn't see a whole bunch of other movies like that. Maybe Temple, maybe, you know, Indiana Jones, but not to the level that we see now, you know?
A lot of movies that got a crap ton of sequels back then were cheap to make, like Death Wish 3, Death Wish 4.
Right.
Yep. Canon Films made those for $6 in a taco.
Yep.
You know,
and a
like
taco.
Making a Ghostbusters movie is going to be expensive. So it's like,
especially like the effects were expensive too at the
it's
time.
It's not like the Marvel movies now where there's one, there are two or three every year. But
right.
Yeah. And all right, this always bothers me. The Statue of fucking Liberty.
I love that.
God damn
come
it.
On.
See, John hates it. I mean, I can kind of see the need for it, but I just feel like they maybe could have achieved it without. It almost feels like pandering. Like it's like, oh, the heroes and they're in Lady Liberty and. You know, it's like, you know, it's
they needed a symbol.
Well, I mean, I think
something pure.
Well, one of the problems,
one
of the problems I do have with like many movies that take place in New York City is that people don't have a way to make New York City like it's always a character.
Yeah.
Like, New York City is always a character in films. If that's where the movie takes place. And I feel like they just kind of overdid it with the symbol of Lady Liberty.
I think
it's like a little much.
I think, though, that's because the fact that if you've got a setting like New York, you should make use of it. And I think that's why New York becomes the character in a lot of movies.
But it becomes like self-aggrandizing. Like they're almost like jerking themselves off constantly at some point.
I'm going to say this. New Yorkers have a fucking boner for themselves.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
New York loves New York.
Oh, and I think that that's like personified in using Lady Liberty in this movie. Yeah. I think that's what the
problem is. Every city has a fucking boner for their own city. Like, Pittsburghers have a boner for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, but
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's like a good boner, and I love the boner.
Have you been down to the stadium on Steeler Sunday? The whole stadium's full of boners
right
there.
Sunday Night Football tonight.
Yeah.
Go Steelers.
Yeah. But my point is that I don't see anything wrong with that. Yeah. I think it's nice when you have a location that isn't just a basic location, that it does become kind of a character.
Yeah.
And in this movie, you in essence, it is the city. It's the hero and it's also the villain. Because when we get to the point where slime is introduced. Now, do you want to go down and talk about the slime?
Jump into slime?
Do you want to jump into slime?
Well, yeah, so let's now that we've gotten the negativity out of the way, let's talk about why. And Lane, I don't know how you feel, because this movie puts me right on the fence. I love it, but I feel that if I'm looking at it critically, I just don't think it's there.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the positives and say why this movie has like a lot of decent qualities to it. So you mentioned
okay,
slime.
So for me, I think the slime is a nice aspect of it. I think there are times when they overdid it, but I like the idea of the slime being a character more than just, oh, there's slime. You know, and you know the reason why they did it is because, oh, every toy can now have slime added with it.
Yeah.
You mean you like know? Why they suddenly have random black outfits during the montage so they can sell two different lines of toys?
Absolutely.
What?
Absolutely.
That's crazy.
But studios call this toyetic, by the way.
Yes.
The movie needs to have a toyetic.
Yes.
Meaning you need to find excuses to put things in the movie so we can make extra toys.
Wow, that's really messed up.
In regards to the slime, in the plot of the film, if you haven't seen it, basically the slime is what feeds all the paranormal activity.
Yeah, it's kind of like evil personified, yes. Which I do think that is an element that's kind of interesting. It's running through everything.
Yes.
It can touch everything. Like, that's kind of profound when you really think about it.
It's pure concentrated evil.
But basically, like, the slime is kind of like the energy source for all the paranormal activity. And that the bad attitudes that people in New York have, which I find funny, distills down into the sludge, as Winston calls it. And ultimately, the whole moral of the story is that, you know, the only way you can counteract that kind of negativity is with positive energy, which then they make into positive slime.
Yeah, I mean, it gets a little convoluted.
This slime is positively charged. But
it's right. Like, how'd you do that? Oh, we're not going to show you.
Yeah, just there'll be a little switch on your toy, kids. Positive and negative.
But that's fine.
Can you imagine, though, like, if they had done the movie now, there would definitely be a subplot where they, like, started their own spa with the positive slime. I mean, there's, like, people pay, like, $60 for a fucking isolation tank now. Yep. They would pay some money for positive slime.
No, Lynn. If they made the movie now, they'd be in a back alley trying to figure out how to use their new slime, and they'd be flying all around the room and falling on their butts. And then doing a bunch of improv that has nothing to do with anything. And then they'd be like, oh, there's not enough wontons in my soup.
Leave my lady Ghostbusters alone, you hater.
Ghostbusters should be men.
Oh, my God.
You did your hashtag not my movie.
I was going to say you did your best Vince McMahon right there.
And Captain Marvel should smile.
Oh, shit. Them be fighting words right there. Yeah, and our severed head just fell down
anyway.
On our table.
All right, guys. I have a controversial take to make here.
Okay.
Every movie is about something. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much.
A decapitated head fell off our table.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fellow podcaster helping us out here.
Yep.
Thank you very much. And one of the eyes popped off.
We lost an eye.
All right, but guys, I would say that at least this movie is about something. Because there's an old saying, every movie is about something except Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters is about nothing.
The original.
And there are a bunch of film essays to back up this
theory. For real?
Oh, yeah. It's fascinating reading. Definitely, like, Psycho's Nation. Look that shit up. It's really interesting.
You can't actually say what Ghostbusters is about. You know, every movie's about something.
I think it's about a group of people battling ghosts. Isn't that what it is?
Well, no, it's like...
But, like, a greater theme. Like, this is about, like... You know, like unfair, you know, practices in the society, or you know what I mean? Like,
no, that's
a greater,
point.
Like, overarching theme.
Point.
Ghostbusters also has the original has very little plot, and it's a Republican movie. It's Republican propaganda.
It seriously is.
Yeah.
It seriously is.
It's very, like, anti-regulation.
Yeah, the private sector is evil, and it's the little guy who runs his business is going to save the day from the corporate bureaucrats.
Right.
Small government. You know, business
That's what I meant. I think I said anti-small business. That's not what I meant.
Yeah, Republicans actually love this movie. So, Ghostbusters is far from perfect. Yeah. We also don't need to mention Dan Aykroyd's blowjob again.
But you just did.
Which is actually a scene where they go to an old Confederate place to investigate the paranormal there, and they are actually sleeping up in the old brothel area.
Oh.
That's why he gets a blowjob. But...
Nobody explains that. It's weird.
Yeah, and they do kind of like it's like a dream sequence.
Yeah.
So, because Dan really wanted his boner in there.
Okay.
Give me free vodka, Dan. But so, Ghostbusters the original is far from perfect, and at least this movie is about something. Has a congruent plot. I mean, there are pacing issues.
And just for our friends, like. Out in the space of the world, what is this movie about, John, the second one?
Well, it is about people coming together in the unification of positivity to overcome any obstacle. That no matter how much evil is out in the world, that if we work together, we can change the world by the power of positivity.
Got it.
We can destroy bad slime.
Yeah.
That's ultimately what it is. But there is a villain in this, right?
Yes. Yes.
Vigo.
And I would just say, and to wrap up, at least Venkman has an arc in this one.
Yeah, he does like try to not suck a little bit, which is nice.
Nobody has an arc in any of these movies except Venkman in the second. Doesn't in the first.
I mean, can we talk about this at greater depth? I mean, like, I feel like we're shitting on Dana Barrett, and don't get me wrong, like, Sigourney Weaver, I love. She's amazing. She's like a really strong icon, I think, for young women, you know, for me growing up. Like, I mean, always.
Is that a trick question?
Always.
Trick question?
But the I don't necessarily understand why she's in this second one again. And I think that the whole she was with Venkman, they broke up, she was with somebody else, and then she broke up with him. I think that's very odd. Like, it's an odd place to leave us in the situation.
Well, Lane, I'm going to take the feminist approach on this. I think Dana attracts the wrong kind of person. Because the guy that she was dating in the orchestra was like a weird, dorky jerk. Then she dated Venkman, who's a weird, dorky jerk. And I'm sure this guy that she had the kid with was also toxic to her.
And I'm sorry, that's feminist how?
Well, no, I'm saying that...
You just said she had bad taste in men. You just blamed her for the men.
I was
going
to say, your first 5 seconds, you were not feminist at all.
I'm not sure feminist means what you think it means. I'm just kidding. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, well, I just think it's a strange point because, I mean, I know that we had to set it up for, like, there to be, like, a potential romance with her and Venkman again, and she had to have this child, but, like... I don't know. There's other ways that I think you could have written that. It just seems overly complicated.
I think that they, at one point, wanted to kind of, and I might be wrong on this, I think they wanted to insinuate that Oscar was Venkman's kid.
I'm sorry, say again?
I think they wanted to insinuate that Oscar was Venkman's kid.
Oh, that's weird. I didn't get that, though.
I think I remember reading that was... A plot point at one point.
Yeah, and I mean, that would have made more sense, I suppose, where, like, you know, maybe they were, like, divorced or something, and Venkman was just, like, a shitbag, and, like, he could still have an arc and, like, be a better dad, you know?
And I think they kind of snuck that in there because he becomes kind of like a surrogate father towards the end of the movie.
Well, too, I think it's hard to sell him as a...
Grant arc, you know?
I think it's hard to sell him as a character, though, if, like, he's a dick to his own kid. Like, it's hard to get back on his side, probably. So, I mean, that's difficult. But I just thought it was more complicated. Like, and their romances, like, the moments of their, like, rekindling of their romance, it feels kind of forced.
It's
like,
very
that's
forced.
One of the things that doesn't work for me. It feels, like, shoehorned in.
Well, Lane, I'm glad you brought that up. Because I want to mention some of the things that people have problems with this movie.
Yeah.
And these are some that I just don't get. People said that Bill Murray phoned this the fuck in. Now, I'm a big Bill Murray fan, but how can you tell when he's dedicated to something and when he's not? It's all the same Bill Murray to me.
I mean, he didn't like the script.
Right.
Let's
but
be honest
I think
here.
He was still
he said
fine.
He hates it.
And I mean, like,
he's
that's
still very
fine,
funny
but,
in
like,
the movie.
He's all right. I mean, though I will say the comedy in this one's less, I think. The second one isn't as funny as the first.
It depends on the kind of comedy you're looking at. I think that with Ghostbusters 2, you're getting more of a almost drier type of Bill Murray comedy.
That's very true.
Instead of
in general. I just mean in general,
well,
not even
if
just
you,
Bill
if
Murray.
You think about it, like, when Ghostbusters came out in 84, you know, we were looking at movies like Stripes and Caddyshack. Those were the types of Bill Murray movies that we were getting, so it makes sense that the jokes at that time were basically those types of Bill Murray jokes.
Yeah, and that could be something that people might not have responded to as well, just because they're used to a different kind of comedy from the guy.
Yeah.
If you're used to one thing and you get like a more dry approach, like people sometimes don't take too kindly to that. It's why people don't always like British humor, because it's so dry.
Ew. But the rest of the movie is very slapstick. The humor in this one is more based on goofiness because it's based on a cartoon.
Yep.
You know, in fact,
it's a sequel to the cartoon. Don't forget.
If there had never been a Ghostbusters, I would have said, wow, this is a perfect interpretation of that cartoon.
Yeah,
you know?
It's true.
It's like Egon's hair is not as amazing, you know, and it's brown
Egon's
this time.
Egon's hair is so good in the cartoon. It's so good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the humor to me is still there. It's still very funny. As we mentioned, the courtroom scene is hilarious.
Oh, my God.
It is. It's a good scene. It's really funny.
You know, Venkman's World of the Psychic is hilarious.
That's all. That's a good scene. And the one character, the woman who was visited by the alien, her name's Elaine.
Oh, yeah.
Her character name is Elaine. And that actress still looks amazing. That was a long time ago. She looks good.
But so, yeah, those are some of the things that are indefensive.
Some of the issues,
yeah.
But so one of the reasons this movie did not do as well is I have this movie took a batarang to the proton pack. The first movie made $229 million. This one made $112
million. Yikes.
Part of the reason that it didn't make nearly as much is that this movie was the highest grossing weekend of all time when it came out.
Right.
Only to be literally raped in the butt by Batman the following week.
No. And you can't predict that sort of thing. Well, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you also had that weekend. Wasn't also Indiana Jones Last Crusade, UHF, and I think...
Well, UHF did not do well.
Well, yeah, but you know what I mean. Like, Like, you've got these other movies coming in that are going to steal that audience away from you, you know? Right. And Ghostbusters just wasn't it.
So, Ghostbusters made $29 million, which is a record at the time.
Right. Yeah.
Batman made $40 million the following weekend.
Oh, wow.
And Batmania swept the country, baby.
Baby.
That was it. That was all she wrote. Because Batman was everything at the time.
Yeah. Well, what was the budget, do you know, for the second movie?
There was a lot put into it.
Did they make their money back?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They did. Yeah. But I just don't think the profit was nearly as much as they wanted.
Yeah.
You know? I see what you're saying. But
you know, a lot of people say it wasn't as edgy, but what does that even mean? There was... Oh, I think a table broke here at PodCon.
No. The one table where there's like glass.
Looks like they saved everything,
it.
But what does that really mean? There was less smoking and less Dan Aykroyd penis.
I mean, still, I'm kind of okay without those.
There
things.
Was still plenty of edgy jokes, like when Egon says, "I think she's more interested in my epididymis,"
right?
Which is the valve that connects the testes to the seminal fluid.
Oh.
Yeah.
Who knew?
When they say, "Oh, I'd like to do a gynecological test on the mother," and Bateman, I think, says, "Who wouldn't?"
Yeah.
You know, there's still plenty of adult humor in this movie.
I just don't think it's nearly
as something too, I
obvious.
Think, well,
as it
I
was
think,
the
like,
one.
Too, it's a bit more cerebral. They kind of put it over, like, kids' heads, you know?
Yep. Yeah. But,
So
I don't really know what was so overly edgy about the first one that we did not get in this one. Now, I think that there was just more cartoonish humor. And I think that is...
A lot of visual
people
gags.
Are blinded by that. So it's not that it's not as edgy. It's that there's a lot more silliness.
Right.
That wasn't there before.
It's almost campier in a way.
And you even look at the ghosts. The ghosts in this one are more cartoonish.
Yeah. Not as scary, I feel.
Like you have that kind of like reptile creature that like goes through the arch. That's automatically pulled from real Ghostbusters.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
You know?
And Brian, you had mentioned this. My problem was that nobody remembered they were Ghostbusters, but you're right. The opening where we kind of get what they're all doing now is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of foreshadowing there with Egon and Venkman, because Venkman gets a guy in the show that says the end of the world will come New Year's Eve, 1989, which, you know, they prevent that from happening, but it almost did. And in Egon's lab, he's testing the result of negative reinforcement on people.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I saw that.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and there's, you know, it's real cool to see what Egon would be doing, what Venkman would be doing, you know, and the fact that they're now they're relegated to doing birthday parties for little shits, you know.
Right.
Which the little boy that calls him like frauds is Ivan Reitman's son, Jason Reitman, director of Juno and Up in the Air.
Yeah.
That's amazing, isn't
and
it? Blew my goddamn mind.
His daughter is the little girl with the puppy in Venkman's, not Venkman, Egon's.
Now let's take away the puppy?
Yeah. Let's see what happens when we take away the puppy.
Guys, I'm feeling like I might be Egon for Halloween this year.
Oh, really?
I feel like that would be dope. Like,
Egon
I haven't,
with titties!
I haven't picked a Halloween costume yet, but it'd be so cool to do like a victory roll instead of his Carl in the front. Yeah. I'd be into it.
I would say that it's awesome, actually, that it took 5 years for this movie because it provides a fresh perspective. It's not...
I do think the separation is important. Yeah. I think that was a good choice.
It didn't come out like 18 months later where it's like, they're still in the heart of everything. And
I think it's rare that movies of this caliber would come out 18 months later. You know, you got like the only one I could think of in my head that did come out 18 months later was Hellbound Hellraiser 2. That was from a smaller studio. That was after they had screened Hellraiser and everyone knew, oh, shit. This is going to be a really good movie. So they were literally working on the sequel while the first one was playing in theaters. Yeah. But that's rare. That's a rare thing that you're making the sequel that soon. Well, so I like
back
the
to
fact.
The future, how ballsy that was.
That was ballsy at the time. Nowadays, it's not that big a deal. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
I should say Back to the Future, too, because they made the second and third one back-to-back. If the second one bombed, they would have been fucked.
Yeah.
But, yeah, as I mentioned earlier, Peter actually has an arc this time.
That's important. Yep. You know, like, you need that. You need to be grounded by that, like, rather than just having an aimless character, especially if the character's kind of an asshole. Yeah. You can't end the movie with them still being an asshole. It doesn't feel right.
Well, Lane, how did you feel about in the first one,
He's an asshole. He's a con artist. He's kind of a creep and almost a sexual predator. Learns nothing and still gets Dana at the end of the movie.
Right. Well, I mean, like that. I have so many problems with that anyway. But I mean, like, that's just lazy writing, using the woman as trophy. Like, that's the object he gets at the end. That's the thing that he deserves, but like did not do anything to deserve.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Right.
But you know, in this one, he learns to be a better person. He actually has a. He wants to have a second chance. Learns to become like a father figure to this baby, and that, you know, gets more of a layer to himself.
And it's very subtle and like nuanced, because like I think over time, like his fondness for Oscar is very organic. And by the end, when he's like comforting the baby, like when he rescues Dana and Oscar from the museum, it's very organic and doesn't feel that forced.
Right. Now, I will say that one thing that I dislike about this movie is that it puts all the onus on character building on Peter. That's it.
Yeah,
I mean, Peter's the Raphael. He's the Wolverine.
Yeah, but
and he's also the one with the furthest to go. Like, Egon's not a dick.
But my problem is that we're not exploring any other characters. And there's one aspect of this movie that they did kind of cut that would have been nice to have included in that. And that's the idea of Rey being possessed by Viggo.
Yeah, John was explaining that to me. I had no fucking idea, because like they cut around it.
They did.
And like it would have been a cool element, you know, at least to give Rey something to do.
But that's my problem is just that it gives Peter a lot to do. It gives Dana a lot to do. The movie really doesn't give anything to the other characters aside from just general plot.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Rey and Egon are almost, even in the first one, like cartoon characters.
Yeah.
They're these wacky scientists, like Bateman, with all his flaws, is like the human being we're all supposed to relate to.
Right, right.
You know?
Right.
I feel that for adults that went to see Ninja Turtles, which is on our table here, like, they related to April O'Neil. The Turtles were just these wacky caricatures. Like, that's called a VHS tape, that's, kids.
What is one of those things?
Look it up, kids.
But yeah, so, you know, Bateman's the one we can relate to. So if they made 10 of these, they would all have been about Bateman.
Right, right.
You know? And somehow Dana Barrett would have been in trouble with ghosts again.
Right.
But one last thing I was saying in defense of this movie, motherfucking Kurt Fuller, friend of the show, Kurt
friend
Fuller.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show,
and
Kurt
John's
Fuller.
Personal Twitter friend,
yes.
Kurt Fuller.
I love you, Kurt. You are awesome again. No holds barred in Ghostbusters 2. Let's just do all Kurt Fuller movies.
He's very funny in this. Like, I think Kurt Fuller, he's got that niche where he's like the dick, right? Like
he's just an asshole.
But like his comedic timing, like, he plays it so earnestly that it works. Like, it makes the comedy, like, really sing. You know what I mean? Like, he's very good for being a character actor. Like, he's one of the best.
Well, I think they needed to have that
foil.
Walter. They had to have that Walter Peck character.
Yeah.
And they couldn't bring him back, you know.
And I will say this in defense of the movie. He's introduced at the beginning of the movie in the first act when characters are supposed to be introduced, and not at the end of the second act where it's like, hi, I'm a problem. I'm going to shut your machine down. I'm a dick. It's like, this is the end of the second act, Walter Peck.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Right.
Why are you here now? This is bad writing. I think a bunch of cokehead improv actors wrote this.
But he serves as a really good, like, world villain.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, he's more grounded in the reality of the Ghostbusters, why their business no longer exists. He represents that. Contrast to the more supernatural villain we get with Viggo.
Sure, Viggo.
Viggo, that's Skarja Kalpathia.
Can we talk about Janusz for a minute? Like,
oh my God,
Peter McNichol is so fucking good in this movie. He is so funny, and it's interesting how he like runs that line. He's a little much.
He's a hint grating.
He's a little much, but I think it's cool that he's so many elements to the story. Like, he is part plot point. He's like part like sympathetic character, also like part villain because he also becomes possessed, and like part comedy relief. Like, what a neat role for the dude, you know? Like, it's such a cool
character. Made that role, by the way.
Oh, he did?
It was completely different in the script, and he said, what if I'm from where the painting is?
Oh,
and he
dude.
The accent
what?
And all this.
Okay.
Yes, I am. This is Viggo.
It's Viggo.
Fucking dope. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
He did all that himself.
Well, he's a good actor.
What's nice about that is it gives us, as you said, another comic relief to, you know, not just having the Slimer, not just having Rick Moranis. You're getting a more maniacal type of comedy with him, you know? And he has some of the best lines.
Absolutely.
In the movie.
And like, he's one of the most quotable elements, I think, when you quote the movie. It's very easy to quote him.
All of this is wrong.
All of this is wrong.
Guys, let me ask you a question. If Ghostbusters had not existed,
and they made a cartoon show about busting ghosts, and they made this movie, does it get half the hate that it gets without the original existing?
I don't think so, because it's so easy to compare two things. And to compare the second to the first, like, it's natural.
That's my point. I think most of the hatred comes from, oh, that villain's not as good as the first one. The jokes aren't as good as the first
but
one.
But what can you do in that situation? Well, like, if it's too...
We haven't really talked about the villain too much. We haven't talked about Viggo.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
But, I mean, in a comparison scenario, like, if you're going to compare things, that's not fair. Because if it's too similar to the first one, then you also get hate, you know?
I'll say this. Viggo is kind of a shitty villain, but
I don't think so.
In defense of the movie, Zul sucked too.
It's true. There's weaknesses on both ends.
I mean, the fact that the video game made a
it made a joke of Viggo.
Or no, I'm sorry. I'm doing it now. Gozer is the villain, not Zul.
Oh yeah. That's true.
In the video game that came out right after the movie came out for Nintendo. You know, put your end boss is Zul, and now I'm embarrassed because I wanted to make fun of the video game for doing that, and I've been doing it this entire episode.
Guess what? When Ghostbusters 2016 came out, they mentioned Zul too. They didn't say Gozer.
Yeah,
but won't take away your nerd card. It's okay.
So true Ghostbusters fans. Well, sorry, Damien.
Yeah,
I just screwed it up. And that proves it. Like, Gozer was not that great.
It gets muddled, right? Like, the mythology gets very entwined in itself.
Definitely.
So, but it's a little muddled how the slime's connected to Viggo, though.
Right.
I get it. If you look at it from the fact that Viggo is basically, he's a magician. Yeah. So you figure that he would have access to the knowledge necessary to understand where paranormal activity is coming from, that it is coming from the slime, you know?
Yep.
So I get that part. I do find him more terrifying than Zul. And
well, because
Gozer.
It's more elemental, I think, and being connected to the slime, like I said, like that's terrifying, right? Just, evil can run through everything.
Plus just like when he transforms into that demon character, that's some scary fucking shit there.
I think some of the effects in here are really good. I think they're really effective.
Now, what's interesting about Viggo that I don't know if a lot of people know, probably some people know because it's more popular now, than it was, but he's actually voiced by two. He's played by two actors.
Yeah, we looked that
von
up.
Max von Sydow.
We looked that up
voice.
Too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The actor that did play Viggo, he stormed out of the screening because he did not know they were redubbing him.
Oh, what a bummer!
Have you ever actually seen his? Like,
yes.
We watched a video of
terrible.
It. He's not awful, but he's
They're
not good.
Bad.
He was a boxer, right?
They're pretty. Yeah. I think he murdered someone.
What?
Oh,
yes.
Well, speaking of death, the babies that now. When you're an infant or a small child, they usually pick identical twins because there's certain hours that kids can work.
It's labor laws, like child labor laws.
And the two identical babies that played Oscar,
one of them
killed themselves.
It's so sad.
Really?
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, my God.
In 2009?
Yeah, because the other twin, and I mean, they both would have been, but they'd be like 29 now.
Wow. Wow.
But one of them killed himself. Isn't that sad?
That's very sad.
But, yeah, let's talk about the end and how, in defense of this movie, the ending actually works, unlike the original Ghostbusters. And now, I know a lot of people say, John, how do you like Star Wars? Like, you shit on it. That's true. But I still like the original
ones. How do you start
ones.
And you shit on it?
And now people are going to think that I'm a Ghostbusters hater, but I'm pointing out things that we all just gloss over with the original. The ending makes no sense in the first movie. And the fact the director, Ivan Reitman, has said that the ending was a joke against action movies. Because they get blown up in a giant atomic explosion, and then they just get up like they're perfectly fine.
Oh, that's funny.
It's supposed to be a farcical joke that doesn't land.
I see.
Yeah.
So the ending makes no sense.
Oh, bummer.
But this movie, the ending is built up through the entire movie.
It's
and
true.
It makes sense.
It is wrapped up a lot more cleanly.
Yeah.
Because he's winning. Viggo's winning. But then New York actually comes together thanks to the Ghostbusters and the power of positivity. And that destroys him because all that positive thinking is going against all that hatred in New York that he was powering himself with.
Right.
Yep.
You know, and then they're able to just blast him back into the dimension that he came from after he turns into Ray. Who was I the only one that got a boner when Ray was Viggo? I mean, yeah.
I thought it was pretty cool. I thought it was pretty cool. They did bring elements of that whole possession plot into it. I mean, like the moment where when Ray is like analyzing the painting and he gets a little bit of red in his eye, that's supposed to signify, at least to me, that at least when I watched it, that oh, something's up with Ray.
Yeah.
Now they never cut to those extra scenes where he actually almost kills the Ghostbusters.
Whoa, that would have been crazy. Yep.
Like the scenes that
too dark though, right? Like too dark.
Well, very dark. But apparently, what had happened was these scenes were actually turned into the coloring book that got sent out to other countries. So if you look at the coloring book from the time that was sent out to other countries, you'll find those scenes in there.
Wow.
So like there's, and they actually like have segments of the scene taking place.
Can there be like an adult Ghostbusters coloring book? I'd buy the shit out
of that. Yeah, but my point is like,
and then Autobahn.
But basically the scene it takes place is after they're at the museum.
Right.
Ray is driving the car and he's screaming at people in the car and he's like driving like a crazy person. And he says, I'm going to just kill us all.
Shit.
And, like, I think Venkman or Winston socks him in the face.
Oh.
And it's right as he crashes the Ecto-1.
Shit.
And he's like, guys, what happened? You know?
And which, so, yeah, that's not something that comes, like,
fully. Well, they reuse
around.
It in the montage scene.
Yeah, they do.
Right.
That's when, like, Venkman's in the back, like, what's he driving so crazy for?
Yep.
You know, and you're just supposed to think, oh, Ray's a bad driver.
And you can actually, see... Dan Aykroyd like acting crazy a little bit in the background.
Wow.
Like he's moving around
a lot.
That's
fun. That's for a rewatch, right, guys?
Yeah. But it's interesting. Like they took those elements out, but they did keep parts of it though. Like because we do get to the end, and you know, Viggo needs that body that he wants to possess so that he can be in power in the 21st century. He doesn't get Oscar, but he's like, well, my next second best is going to be Ray.
I want your body.
Can we point out? All right, here's something negative. Can we point out how his plan makes absolutely no sense at all?
Dude,
I'm going to inhabit the body of a baby.
Yeah.
I'm going to be helpless for at 2.5 years.
Yeah, but I'm
going
to bake up my evil, and by the time I'm ready to walk, I'm going to be fucking evil.
Have you ever seen The Omen?
That's true.
But then
that's the plot of The Omen.
They didn't know he was the spawn of Satan.
True.
The thing is, if you want to rule the world... Do you put yourself in a completely helpless situation for 3 years?
I mean, it doesn't make a great deal of sense, dude.
And he's
got
to grow up before he can kick. Why wouldn't he just go into Ray from the outside?
He's thinking about evil, all right?
I'm telling you.
He's thinking about evil.
The Omen.
It's stupid.
It's The Omen. It's basically the plot of The Omen, only we're now dealing, instead of Satan, we're dealing with Viggo. So I get that. I think it works.
Right.
It also kind of ties in. Why Dana's being targeted, why Oscar's being targeted. So there had to be some sort of element of why we're targeting Dana again, and that's the reason why.
Right.
Would the baby start talking, like, as Viggo right away? Like, I, Viggo, as baby, rule the world.
Yep.
Well, I think it'd just be great if he's, like, taking a shit. He's like, I, Viggo, have defecated into this diaper. Yeah. You shall now deal with it.
I sit on a throne of poop.
I feel like that's how most babies just are. They just can't talk yet.
Oh, they are. Believe me, I can tell you that from experience.
Maybe like Stewie Griffin.
It's true. Yeah. That is actually very true. But
although they're smiling when they do it. Like, that's the thing. They're not going to get angry at you like,
no.
I'm sitting on a throne of poop.
They're like, I am sitting on a throne of poop.
And your fucking ass is going to clean it. Like, that's basically it.
So guys.
Oh, Lane. Sorry.
Okay.
Well,
one point here.
Go ahead.
I just want to point out one last thing. Ghostbusters, and I know that for our fans that have listened to all of our episodes, first off, thank you.
Thank you a lot.
Secondly,
like a million times, thank you.
I know you're sick of hearing this, but it's the first time you're ever listening to us, and it's the first time you're ever hearing it. I say it a lot. Lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
Ghostbusters shouldn't have worked. It shouldn't have happened.
So many movies shouldn't work.
We're going to make a horror movie comedy about ghosts with the guys from Saturday Night Live. It's like, what the fuck?
No, seriously.
You know,
it shouldn't have worked.
Yeah, and it shouldn't have worked as a script, and it just did. And nothing is going to live up to that.
It's never
going
to be as good.
As much as you want something different, you don't. And,
right. You
know, it's going to paint and color everything.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's true. Do like a sequel or they do a remake or they do another remake down the line.
Yep.
You know, or a sequel to the first movie, you know, in 10 years like they're doing now with Terminator and everything else and Halloween.
Yep.
So that is just, that's such a difficult thing to deal
with. To recreate that magic, you know, it's hard.
But sorry, Lane.
But I'll go ahead.
Well, I mean, what I was going to just say, guys, like, Ghostbusters 2, really that awful. Like, I was going to get, like, you guys' final thoughts, you know?
I would say it's not that awful. I would say, and maybe it's the nostalgia. I mean, I recently watched it again, not even for this review. I watched
it. It's on Prime.
It's on Prime. I watched it because I was still at home on paternity leave.
Right.
And even though I'd grown up with Ghostbusters, I was a fan of it back then, even though this movie was one of my favorites back then, I still found it enjoyable.
Right.
And can it really be that awful if you're finding it enjoyable? So yeah. Are there problems with it? Absolutely.
Yeah, it has problems.
It has problems, but I think it does a pretty decent job of continuing what a sequel should do. It continues the story. You know, it picks up where the last one left off and continues the story forward. So right. I think in that regard, it is successful.
Yeah.
It's not as good. It's a little too long. It's disjointed. It is not as good as the original. It copies and pastes everything. Slimer's in it too much.
Slimer's
in it. Is in it too much. Having said all that, no, it is really not that awful.
I agree.
It can't hold a candle to the first one, but most movies can't.
And, right. You know, and I mean... Yeah, you know, everybody can kind of come after me for this, but there is the nostalgia element.
There is.
89, like, I was a kid. Like, I love that effing cartoon, and I love this movie, you know? So, I mean, like, it's one of those things where, like, you do look back on it a little bit fondly, and maybe you watch it, you know, when you're actually, like, really paying attention. You're like, that doesn't work totally. Yep. But, you know, it's one of those things that you kind of accept, you know?
You know, absolutely. I will say, yeah, it's really not that awful. That doesn't mean I'm giving it a get out of jail free card.
No, of
there's
course
so
not.
Many goddamn problems with this movie.
Yeah,
of course.
It's not a great movie, but
no, but
I
it's
mean,
not a horrible
anytime
movie.
You get a Ghostbusters thing, you should appreciate it. And yeah, it's far from perfect, but it's not an awful movie.
Absolutely.
Like the rap that it gets.
Absolutely,
definitely. So I think that's it. Lane, where can they find you on the Twitter
you
machine?
You can find me at LA_Croft, and I don't check Twitter that often right now, so leave me a little surprise, and I'll find it later.
What about you, John?
At the Unreal J. Wolves, feel free to message me or DM me if you're mad at my takes on the original Ghostbusters.
As always, slide into his DMs.
Slide in there.
That's right.
Make sure you wear lube.
And you can find me at Brian Connington. Also on the Psycho Show page, be sure to like us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Google+, at Psycho Show. You can also find us on the Epicast Network at epicastnetwork.com. If you have a favorite movie or question you want to throw away, you want to talk to us a little bit about your favorite time with slime, you can contact us at cinemapsychoshow.com. And make sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and iTunes and catch a new episode every Sunday.
Oh, bustin' makes me feel good.
We are here. Epicast.